This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
BFM 89.9, you're listening to The Morning Run with Lynn Roshan and Noel. How are you guys today?
I'm feeling okay. It's Tuesday. I'm just telling you the day.
Okay,
you're looking at me.
I'm having a bit of fun with my iPad. Not new iPad. I adopted an iPad from a family member. It's a little bit of a trial period. I'm having fun with the Apple Pencil and taking notes and things like that. Yes, I'm a little late to the game, everyone. It's new tech to you. It's new tech, but more importantly, I don't have to have 17 different pieces of paper in front of me anymore. You know, I'll leave that for the tech review, which I will do at some point in my life.
I feel a little bit like I've missed a memo this morning because the both of you are in bright red. So is it me that's missed the memo and I've come in like navy blue, or have you missed the memo that it's not yet Chinese New Year?
See, we were incepted yesterday when the office started putting up Chinese New Year decorations.
Yes, I was very much inspired by that.
See, we feel the vibe, Lynn. I don't know what you're feeling, but we definitely jive with the vibrations of the office. And the office was saying, time to celebrate Chinese New Year.
That sounds rather neat. At 6 a.m. in the morning.
Yeah, it is 6 a.m. in the morning. But you know what? We do have lots of interesting things to discuss
despite
the early hour. What are we going to be talking about later on about 6:30, Roshan?
Well, we take a look around the world and we'll be taking a look at the Middle East and Turkey, as well as some COVID-19 vaccine updates. Merck shuts its program down while Moderna has some updates.
Interesting stuff. And Noel, in about 10 minutes or so, we've got some other stuff lined up.
We're going to be talking about upskilling and whether, what employers should be doing.
Okay, and if you want to weigh in on those conversations, remember you can WhatsApp us. The number is 018-789-8899 or tweet us at BFM Radio. Up next, I'm going to be asking you, where are you most creative? So stay tuned for that. BFM 89.9. BFM 89.9, that was Paper Cup by Real Estate, and you're listening to The Morning Run with Lynn Roshan and Noel. So innovation means different things to different people, right? And we each have to apply innovation in different ways in our working lives, in whatever hobbies it is that we enjoy. And I don't know about you, but I find that there are specific circumstances which I find trigger more of a feeling of creativity than others. So when I feel like, okay, I'm pretty stuck, I need to get those creative juices flowing, one of the first things I do is I change my environment, whether it's walking out of the office somewhere else, or whether to go home perhaps, or whether it's walking out of my house to go downstairs, or if it's taking my laptop and everything else and going to work in a cafe. And this obviously isn't something that we can physically do right now with the MCO, but it does raise an interesting question that people have been trying to address for a long time of why are we so keen on cafe environments sometimes to foster that working feeling, that creativity in whatever it is that we do.
Yeah, so I think changing environments obviously quite a big part of it. And I think, people try to understand the brain, for example, what happens in the brain when feelings of creativity sort of arises, right? And so I think that's one part of the brain called the temporal parietal junction. It's on the, on the posterior side of the brain.
Flashbacks to biology
class.
Yes,
that's right. Yeah. So that part gets triggered, if you meditate or you do something really mindfully, that part of the brain gets activated. That's apparently linked to perspective thinking, creativity, and also empathy. It's quite close to empathy as well. So that's quite interesting. I think it activates certain parts of your brain. I think something happens when you sit in a different environment. And I was just reading this article, right? This other part where it says observation. Observing what you see, what you hear. I think that's really crucial. And that's what companies do, right? And I guess one of the most popular tools of innovation is design thinking, and observation is that first step, right? And several companies, just by sheer observation, they have come up with, very interesting products. And one comes to mind is P&G. When we went into a home to observe how women were going about with their work and also parents in general. And they found that people like to mop the floor after preparing a meal. And so they came up with a Swiffer mop, which is a fast clean. So you don't have to use a pail and a heavy mop to mop the floor. You can use something that was quick. It's just observations can be, play quite a key part in how we can be more creative.
Yes, yes to all of that. Right on the money there, Noel. I'm still caught with the brain, the part of the brain that you mentioned. What was that again?
Temporoparietal junction.
All right, everyone say that 5 times. And if you succeed, WhatsApp us at 018.
TPJ for short.
TPJ. If you manage to do it 5 times in a row, WhatsApp us at 018-789-8899 and you'll get nothing. You'll get nothing from us at this point. But it's very interesting, Noel, this consumption part, all right? So this, just to break it down, I think this Fast Company article has listed 5 ways, essentially, to get those creative juices flowing, as Lynn so eloquently put it. One is consumption and exposure. 2, changing your environment, which we just addressed. 3, check in and challenge yourself. Basically, get a bit of insight into what's going on in your life right now and where you stand in all of it. 4 is being open and staying open to new ideas that challenge how you perceive things are at this point, or the ideas that you think are right. And 5 is being brave. And I think this, how this differs from staying open, is not just being open to new ideas and innovation, but then it takes a lot to go against the grain and say that, I think it should be this, or put out new ideas. I mean, ask anyone who's ever posted up a YouTube video. That requires some amount of bravery to do that. And I'm totally not speaking from experience or anything like that. Consumption and exposure is very interesting, because I think we can get into it's a form of procrastination if you use that as an excuse to, if you're consuming a bunch of media and just sitting, I'm studying the environment, I'm consuming this because I'll get an idea from it. It doesn't work if you don't actually do the work, right? You can't just say, I'm getting inspired. You have to sit down and actually study.
You can't do market research forever, basically.
Yeah, you can't do market research forever. But beyond that, you actually have to jot down the different notes that you're taking. So, for example, when I used to watch stand-up comedians, and I used to watch them because I was trying to study them, the way they story told and things like that, I would actually have a notepad and I'd be like, okay, Hasan Minhaj does this. Joe Rogan does this a lot. Ricky Gervais is really loud a lot of the times, you know. It's just trying to get a semblance of how they went about it, and then of course relating it back to yourself, because it's not a cookie cutter template. You can't use everyone else's kind of a model and then apply it to yourself. You take what you can and then kind of model it into a new version for yourself.
So it's a bit kind of interesting, because you've both brought up very different ways of focusing. So for you, Roshan, what you're talking about is a very active observation engagement style. Whereas Noel, you use the word meditative, and I think I tend to veer more towards the meditative side of things. So that's partly why I enjoy working in a loud environment, because that consistent background noise for me is calming. Because, you know, when you, I don't know whether you've also found that silence can be very loud. When you're sitting alone in a room with nothing else on, your thoughts all crowd into your head and then you can't actually focus on one thing.
Which is why I'm using a lot of lo-fi music on YouTube right now, particularly Star Wars lo-fi music. I'm loving it. But, you know, Lynn, it's not mutually exclusive, right? Yeah. So I use both sides of the equation there. There are times when I need to be meditative, and that's when productivity needs to get done. So if I know what I want to do, and I have the ideas, then I can work on it. But in a sense, if I need to brainstorm and ideate and things like that, I need a little bit of open space, or maybe I need to consume some media, do some reading, watch some stand-up comics, listen to some podcasts, or go for a walk. I've started getting back to the habit of walking, and I love it because and I leave my phone at home, so there's no interruption.
Yeah, so I think it's about a balance, right? You can be in that sort of meditative state, but it's also being in a state that feels natural to you. Mm. So the reason why the iPad, for example, is so popular, people just took it on so easily, I think, but maybe some scientists have talked about it, it's because you get to use your hands quite actively. You know, you're sliding the screen, you know, you're using
it's
your
tactile.
Hands. Yeah, the tactileness, because it you know, there's something very human about wanting to use our hands. And that's the reason why I think children like to eat burgers, because they get to use their hands instead of some fork and spoon, you know. So, so I think you put yourself in that environment, and why you like to use that pen, or Apple Pencil, because it's a tactile and it's an activity that you can use.
So let us know what you think about this. You can WhatsApp us in at 018-789-8899 or tweet us over at BFM Radio. Tell us, in what environment are you most creative? We're going to be heading into some messages, and then we'll be looking at more fascinating stories for you. So be sure to stay tuned. BFM 89.9. BFM 89.9, that was It's Just Begun by the Jimmy Castor Bunch, and you're listening to The Morning Run with Lynn, Roshan, and Noel. So we're looking at this article in Fast Company this morning talking about employee well-being. So this is long-term employee well-being and what basically factors into that. Because this is in the interest of most companies nowadays to preserve. Because ultimately, a happier workplace leads to higher productivity, leads to less sick leave taken by your employees, and less turnover as well, because unhappy employees will have a tendency to look for ways out of your company. And this article talks about, you know, the one thing, the magic ingredient that companies can look into in order to preserve that long-term employee well-being. And while I don't necessarily think that it's only just the one thing that you need to do, perhaps, it's a good point that they're making, that upskilling is really the key to keeping employees happy. What do you guys think about this?
This is an interesting one, right? Because they're citing a survey that basically said that nearly half of employees would leave if they didn't see a commitment to upskilling mm-hmm. from the company. And I think this ties is in parallel to the fact that also nearly half of employees believe that their core skills will be obsolete within the next 5 years. So I guess that's where the through thread is, right? Because end of the day, the long term, you want to know that we've all seen the disruption that has happened in the last 20, 30 years. This was not something that happened as fast before. So we're all constantly on edge thinking about the different ways that we need to keep improving and maintaining a certain level of progress, right? But it's very hard to do that if you don't have a company that doesn't support an endeavor like that, right? One, do you really want to stay at a company that where you see no growth for yourself? And two, how do you upskill yourself outside? Like I've got like 5 Coursera right now as we speak on this browser I'm using right now. There are 5 Coursera links open to different courses. There is international business. There is visualization for journalism. And then there's IBM data science. I've committed to none of them because of, well, this thing called time. But at the same time, I do know I want to upskill because I know I'm not, I don't know this, but I am always concerned about where the future could go. At any one point, there are multiple paths you could take. You could stay at the same company. You could go to another company. You could get retrenched. These are all real possibilities that have become even more of a concern in the last 12 months. So always looking ahead, I think even amongst my group of friends has become a more key concern than ever before.
I think I've seen these surveys quite often. 10 years ago, a lot of that survey right at the top would be about promotion and pay. Mm. I'm talking mm-hmm. about this part of the world. But I think in the last 5 years, when people are becoming really aware of that their skills are going to be obsolete in the next 5 years or even sooner, there's a lot more interest in upskilling themselves. And because there's so many online options like Coursera, there's almost no excuse, right? And so I think employers also need to pay heed to this. And I say why employers need to pay attention to this is because most employers I know from my experience, they just underinvest in this. And at most, if they invest in this, they will say, okay, these are the online options, just go to them. So I think this thing has to be gamified in some ways. Like, so for example, Roshan, if say one of us were also going to be doing this data science course, so now you have a tribe, right? And would you be more motivated to get onto it?
Yeah, for sure. I think that would definitely be it. And I was supposed to do it with my cousin, but because I couldn't commit at that time, he started it without me and he completed it already. So he's got that done.
So your tribe left you behind.
My tribe left me behind.
Fine, and your tribe.
You know, when we talk about the interest, it also comes down to whether the interest of the employer is in line with the interest of the employee, right? Mm-hmm. If the employer is a type of employee who feels like, well, they're going to leave anyway, maybe they feel it's against their interest to commit to the employee, right? And to give long-term benefits and things like that. It's easier to just make a nice office and have a coffee machine as opposed to spending money, investing in your employees and then having them and then seeing them leave to go somewhere else and utilize their skills elsewhere.
It could be a self-fulfilling prophecy, right? At the end of the day, by telling yourself that, oh, they're going to leave anyway and then not bothering to invest in this. And then you find that they leave. But so, you know, I just want to also address the concerns of now, because right now there are a lot of people who, yes, are just happy to have a job. But I also do know people whose employers have told them that and who are looking elsewhere as a result, because some companies have kind of, I don't want to say used the excuse, but they've taken a look at this environment and basically told employees, okay, look, you're not going to get anything for the next 2-3 years. And that's just a blat, you know, it's just a frank reality. But as a result, you do, that has pushed a lot of my peers to look elsewhere for jobs where they can see some other form of growth that doesn't come from within the company. And that's also an unfortunate, that's an unfortunate fact of life, right? Because human beings are always searching for the next level. And if your present circumstances don't allow for that, maybe you're going to look elsewhere. I also know people who have been stuck in long-term situations. A friend of mine was bitter about the fact that his application for personal development growth had been rejected 3 times by the organization. And he's still there because he still believes in the organization. So it's, everyone is different, but if you really want to offer employees perhaps the best avenue for their growth, even, you know, and you want to, you are willing to take the risk that they're going to take those skills elsewhere, you have to maybe invest in this a little bit more.
I think this is where leaders need to walk the talk, right? So you just need to look at your top leadership and see whether they are upskilling themselves. So like, for example, the founder of this station, Malik Ali, he's big on this, right? He's signed up for numerous courses, including, I think, machine learning as well. And, you know, he's really into social media. So, you know, he is someone I'm very inspired to, you know, of, because, you know, he inspires me because, you know, he's constantly learning at 50 plus years old.
Yeah, and it's also important to remember that, you know, younger people are looking for growth in different ways because they're no longer, there's no more 30-year careers at the same company anymore, right? That doesn't exist anymore.
So let us know what you think. How important is it to be able to upskill in your workplace to you? WhatsApp us 01878988899 or tweet us over at BFM Radio. We have the 6:30 news bulletin coming up for you, and to take you there is Aretha Franklin and George Michael with I Knew You Were Waiting For Me, BFM 89.9. BFM 89.9, that was Mercy by Duffy, and you're listening to The Morning Run with Lynn Mark, Roshan Kanisan, and Noel Lim. 6:40 in the morning, Tuesday the 26th of January, and right now we are looking at what's been happening on the international stage and in the international news portals. And in front of me right now, I have an article in Al Jazeera talking about how the relations between Turkey and Saudi Arabia look to be improving as we've seen the end of the Gulf crisis and the uncertainty surrounding Qatar. Because if we remember, 2 years ago, relations between Turkey and Saudi Arabia became quite strained. They were described as the lowest point, I believe, in the history of those two regional powers following the murder of the journalist Jamal Khashoggi in Istanbul.
Yeah, so I think with Biden coming on board as president, states in the Middle East are just getting their act together, right? They're pulling up their socks, and now there's a lot of brotherly love going on. Everyone's trying to mend their ties and, you know, present a good face to Biden.
Yeah, and this, correct me if I'm wrong here, but I think this comes off the back of the fact that basically Saudi Arabia and its allies in Doha have basically become friends again with Qatar. And because Turkey and Qatar are friends, so this kind of helps the situation. So it's really just about Turkey couldn't just watch its friend get bullied.
It's like a playground.
I'm trying to make this analogy work, right? And then you've got like the US in the playground over there, but he's not so bothered. He's in the corner this time, but now Biden's back. Biden's in the picture. Maybe things changed a little bit.
You've got a new teacher in the room, lah.
Yes, yeah, but the fact that the dynamics have slowly changed, right? This is the ripple on effect. But, you know, if I remember our conversation with James Dorsey, senior fellow at the S. Rajaratnam School of International Studies and the Middle East Institute, when we talked about this with him, I think about 2 weeks ago, he wasn't so convinced about this whole Qatar back in the fold thing. Now, that we did call the podcast Qatar Back in the Fold, but I think the James thought it was pretty much just a very superficial thing, right? It was just, okay, fine. On the surface, we're going to stop this this whole... no dealings with Qatar. But what does that really mean on the surface? There's still a lot to be worked out on all of that.
Yeah, probably planes could fly over Qatar again if planes were flying.
I have friends who used to work in Emirates and Etihad, and they used to show pictures of their flight paths and they had to just fly around. He worked at Qatar Airways. They had to fly around. Their trips became 2-3 hours longer because they had to fly around these regions, which impacts Qatar quite a bit if you think about it, because it was an international hub.
Yeah, so I think Saudi Arabia and Turkey are anticipating that the incoming incoming Biden administration will drastically shift its priorities in the region, such as backing away from Trump's policy of confronting Iran and now placing more emphasis on human rights. And it's quite an interesting comment here by Ahmed Evin that Al Jazeera spoke to, a political scientist at the university in Istanbul, described that Trump is beholden to the Saudi royal family. So without the Saudis abroad, Trump's real estate empire would have gone bankrupt a while ago. So it's interesting to show this connection here, mm-hmm. how this might have influenced Trump's foreign policy.
Yeah, and of course, another, we can't let a look at international news go without talking about vaccines. But this is one that we've not really heard so much about. And so this was a experiment in developing COVID vaccines run by Merck and Co., which has now been discontinued because early trial data showed that that Merck and Co.'s two experimental vaccines failed to generate an immune response. So this is comparable to any kind of natural infection or the existing vaccines. They did have a history of successfully developing vaccines, and I think they were focusing on the more traditional approach as well, using weakened viruses. They have been laggards in this vaccine development race, and it looks like they've fallen out entirely.
Yeah, so Merck used a different strategy here, the one that's been used by Pfizer and Moderna, which is the ones that we're more familiar with, or even Johnson & Johnson, which I think very recently posted its own results. They used a more traditional approach of focusing on shots based on the weakened virus, and essentially they just didn't hit the mark here, and they are shutting down the program. So it shows you that not every single program that goes into the works comes out successful, right? There are going to be companies that go into this and come out without a finished product.
Yeah, so I think that it comes with the risk, right, of all these pharmaceutical companies. When you invest in them, it comes with that high risk. They put in all this capital expenditure and it may not yield the kind of results that you hope for.
But in contrast, Moderna's COVID-19 vaccine apparently looks to work against newer, more infectious variants of the pandemic virus found in both UK and South Africa. So this is according to scientists from Moderna, who say that their early lab tests suggest that the antibodies triggered by Moderna's vaccine can actually recognize and fight the new variants. I think there's been a lot of concern considering the fact that this UK variant has been a lot more infectious and it's cropped up very recently. So there were worries whether the existing developed vaccines would actually be able to address this new variation.
Yeah, but I think they still do more studies on this to confirm that. And, when we take a look at the vaccine story around the world, we are seeing different efficacy rates, right? And what do these things really mean? The Sinovac vaccine in different trials across the globe has seen varying efficacy rates. So if you're curious and want to learn more about that, check out the podcast, Why Do Vaccine Efficacy Rates Differ? We had a great conversation with Emeritus Professor P.T. Thomas of Taylor's University, who really broke it down for us. I really recommend that conversation.
But right now, we're about to head into some messages. And then up next, we're going to be looking at what's happening on our own local papers and portals. So be sure to stay tuned. BFM 89.9. BFM 89.9, that was Finest Work Song by REM, and you're listening to The Morning Run with Lynn Mark, Roshan Kanitsan and Noel Dim. So we are looking at our newspapers and news portals this morning to see what's been happening in our own home country. And I have the star in front of me. The front page here is Hope Blooms. So a very hopeful headline. And this is as Malaysia, of course, marked a full year since COVID-19 struck the country. Now, the hope in this is that apparently Senior Minister Dato' Sri Azmin Ali says a total economic shutdown will be a last resort. So we may not see the MCO extended beyond February 4th, as everyone so fears.
Yeah, so the NSD spoke to our Health Director General, Tan Sri Dr. Noor Hisham Abdullah. He said that his ministry is projecting that the daily new COVID-19 cases to reach two digits by May if the rates of infections could be stabilised with the implementation of this current MCO. And he said he expects the number of cases to drop after January 27, provided that there are no spike in infections. And I think he's really referring to yesterday's figure, where we only saw about 3,048 new cases, which is a slight drop from yesterday. So he's hoping that the numbers will stabilise.
Yeah, I mean, I think there's a bit general concern, right? Like, why haven't the numbers come down? Things like that. So we'll have to wait and see. So I think January 27th was the date on in the papers, Noel. So that's tomorrow. Let's see how that plays out and whether we start seeing the downward trend kick in, because I think that's what everyone's looking towards. And I mean, just the mere mention of two-digit numbers, I start thinking about, wow, what, like, Really? Is that possible? Can we go back to that?
Yeah. So, but he is also saying that he hopes that I think we have to still enforce the MCO for 4 weeks, followed by the conditional MCO for another 3 months. Then you will get that two-digit cases by May, provided nothing else happened during that time, not a general election or a by-election.
Yeah. I think when it comes to branding, or at least the optics when it comes to the naming, when it comes to these different lockdowns, Singapore did it the right way by calling it a circuit breaker, because that's exactly what it is, right? It's a circuit breaker. When the cases get too high and the infection rate is too strong, then you initiate something that is to stop things from moving, because you just want things to settle down a bit. And I think the idea of a circuit breaker really does show that. Now, while we're speaking of the pandemic and the lockdowns and the impacts that it has had, the Militant Reserves front page goes with a talk on the airlines. And I think there's a little play on words here. Airlines descent further on MCO 2.0. No surprises here. They had a bad year last year. And just as they're seeing a bit of recovery towards the end of last year, MCO 2.0 has kicked in. And essentially, domestic travel was that one saving grace for a little bit. Now we're seeing traffic down to 2% again. But traffic was only, I think traffic peaked at 40% last year towards, I think that was in September. So again, not the greatest year for aviation, but at least domestic travel was kind of propping them up for a little bit. But even that's out the window at this current juncture.
So another interesting story in The Star as well is on page 8. It's a continuation of a tab they've got running on the front page. 11,000 get backing for early release. So there have been calls from parliamentarians to look into the release of non-violent minor offenders from our prison systems in order to alleviate the overcrowding situation that we have been seeing there for many years, and of which is of course exacerbating the effect of COVID-19 in these tight spaces. So apparently the prison department has already identified about 11,000 of these minor offenders who are sentenced to less than 1 year, and they could potentially see this early release that NGOs and working groups have been calling for, which is, I think, a good thing, because if we take a look at a lot of the clusters that we've been seeing over the past few months, many of them have been in prison quarters and detention centres, enough that you fear for the lives of these inmates, because they've been put in prison, some of them for minor offenders. It doesn't warrant the fear of catching this virus and potentially dying of it.
Yeah. So, and the health ministry is also beefing up on their capacity. So we have about 210 private hospitals. MOH has identified 130 with internal medicine expertise. Of that number, 95 hospitals have come forward to say they will work with the ministry and provide the necessary capacity. So I think they're adding about 1,286 beds to the total bed capacity, another 65 ICUs and 54 ventilators. I think that would really, be really helpful.
Yeah, that's great to hear. But I think that's still conditional on insurance firms negotiating their part in the system or the role here. So I think we'll all just have to wait and see how that plays out.
Yeah, that's going to be very tricky, because I did check my insurance companies before in the past, and they said that they don't cover COVID-19. That was last year. So I'm interested to know which some of the current insurances do cover.
Last week, we did speak to Anthony Lee, chairperson of the General Insurance Association of Malaysia, and that's the current situation. Right, because pandemics uncovered in our typical insurance policies, and that changes the math if it is covered. So that's something that they are discussing with their respective authorities.
So something that we will be watching out for any developments on, and we'll bring you updates as we get them ourselves. But right now we have the 7 o'clock news bulletin coming up for you, and then international markets with Joe Quinlan of the US Trust Bank of America Private Wealth Management. So be sure to stay tuned for that. After some music, here's REM with Finest Work Song, BFM 89.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.